KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information available at chevron.com. The California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org. And URS Corporation, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical services to public agencies and private companies. URSCorp.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Rachel Miro in for Scott Schaefer. Coming up, what the budget standoff in Washington, D.C. means for California. Also, scientists brace for a bat disease headed west. And family cooks in West Oakland get a little help putting healthy food on the table for their kids.
If a corner store is selling greens for, say, a dollar, and Safeway has it for 50 cents a bunch, and I have three kids to feed, then I'm going to get on that bus because I've done that.
Also, our series Turning Points continues with the story of one man whose life changed course when his plan A fell apart at the seams.
My life was defined by my kids, my work, and definitely my wife. Once that is taken away, it's like, who am I?
It's the California Report. We begin today by asking the question, a federal government shutdown means what for California exactly? After all, there are 140,000 federal workers here in the Golden State. We asked H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director for External Affairs of the California Department of Finance. In recent days, the agency has been asking around to assess the potential fallout from the standoff in D.C.
Well, our staff has been canvassing all of the state departments and agencies that have a federal program as part of the mix, and determining to the best that we can in a very dynamic and a very fluid environment what the impact would be of a federal shutdown on those programs. In the short term, we think we're going to be okay. Programs like Medi-Cal, the Healthy Families Program, CalWORKs, the state's welfare to work program, will not be affected. Most of the public health and social service programs, things like supplemental nutrition programs, foster care, adoption assistance, child support enforcement, already have sufficient federal dollars that they've drawn down and have in hand to be able to cover most of their activities through June. And as far as unemployment insurance is concerned, unemployment benefits will continue to be paid, and there should be sufficient cash on hand to pay those federally funded workers who work at the Employment Development Department through the month of June.
And if this shutdown lasts beyond June?
Well, then we're going to look at some effects on a number of programs if this shutdown, happens and, B, goes long. A case in point would be in the area of education. The next payment of what are called Title I grants to school districts goes out in the month of June. Now, many of the districts that receive Title I funding have a higher proportion of low-income students, and a number of those types of districts throughout the state are operating on thin margins. And if there is a protracted shutdown going into, say, June, then there is the possible situation where some of those districts that are kind of on the edge could be pushed over the edge and into insolvency.
So much depends on whether a federal employee is considered critical to protecting life or property in terms of what kind of federal services we can expect to continue or not here in California. Homeland Security and TSA personnel keep working, but national park closures mean hikers have 48 hours to get out of Yosemite and the like.
Right. When I say that we're going to be okay in the short run, I'm referring to the federal programs that are run by state agencies. I would not mean to suggest for one moment that there would not be significant impacts in California if there is a protracted shutdown. Many military personnel, for example, are scheduled not to be paid if there is a protracted delay in getting this federal budget resolved. And as you note, areas near and around Yosemite Valley that rely heavily on tourism for their economic livelihood are really facing a tough situation if there's a protracted delay in getting this resolved. So there, while some of the state programs that administer federal programs are going to be okay in the short run, that does not mean that the state writ large is not going to suffer the consequences of a protracted shutdown. Far from it.
A lot of people have been asking, perhaps hopefully, whether the Internal Revenue Service will be processing tax returns on the April 15th deadline. The answer is yes. Are there any concerns at the Franchise Tax Board that the confusion or the hope out there might lead to people delaying their state tax payments?
I wouldn't presume to give any individual Californian tax advice. I would say personally for myself that if there is a protracted shutdown, I'm going to be on the safe side and send in my tax returns.
Well said. I think the safe answer or the tax advice that's always safe to give is that, yes, you should be paying your taxes. And it's worth pointing out that federal government websites will be up and functioning. They just won't be updated. So you can use them to do different things like pay your taxes.
Right. And I should note, as we were talking about a moment ago, we're in a very dynamic and very fluid situation. The guidelines are changing by the day, if not by the hour. So for those individuals who are concerned about this, if we do get into a shutdown situation, I believe the federal government's going to be very proactive in getting the word out about what services, programs, and things of that sort will or will not be operational in a shutdown situation.
H.D. Palmer, keeping a watchful eye on D.C. Thank you so much for bringing us up to date.
Thank you, Rachel.
H.D. Palmer is the Deputy Director for External Affairs at the California Department of Finance. Northeastern U.S., more than a million bats have died because of a disease called white nose syndrome. Slowly but surely, that disease is making its way out west. Scientists here are watching and waiting for it, as Amy Standen reports.
If you can tune out the cars overhead and listen very carefully, you can hear the squeaks and chirps. As many as 10, sometimes 20,000 Mexican free-tailed bats live here underneath the Franklin Boulevard Bridge in the town of Galt, about 20 miles south of Sacramento.
Lots of bats.
Winston Lancaster, a biologist at Sacramento State University, cranes his neck and points up to the underside of the bridge.
Lots more than I thought there'd be.
The brown, furry bats hang in tight clusters. Each one is about 3 inches long with beady, wide-spaced eyes and a pronounced black snout. Lancaster says this is a perfect spot for them.
They like the narrow space. That's really quite comfortable for them because they're protected from predators and they also have a nice, cool place.
This colony of bats is a local success story, says David Johnston, a biologist with the Western Bat Working Group. It's a collection of government agencies and nonprofit groups from 13 states. Johnston says this bridge was built about 50 years ago.
Over the years, like most bridges, it went into disrepair to the point where they knew they had to replace the causeway and the bridge.
But that meant displacing one of the biggest bat colonies in Northern California. So the county brought in bat experts who came up with the design.
Bat researcher approved bat houses.
But the bats didn't like their bat houses, which were perched on stilts near the river. So the biologists tried something simpler. 5 redwood beams fixed to the underside of the bridge, each stretching about 1,000 feet toward the river. It worked.
About 2 months after they opened that, the population went from 2,000 in the area to 15,600.
The story got a lot of news coverage, in part because it's such a stark contrast to what's going on back east. In 2006, scientists in New York State discovered that a strange new disease was wiping out entire colonies of bats. White nose syndrome, as it's now known, is caused by a fungus that destroys the bat's skin and eventually kills them. Now, white nose syndrome is heading west.
I think a lot of us believe that it's going to be introduced into California probably by some unknowing visitor who has it on his or her shoes and clothes.
And once that happens, several species of bats in California are likely to start getting sick. The most vulnerable are the so-called little brown bats that live in the far north and in the Sierra Nevada mountains. Those bats hibernate in caves where the fungus thrives. But in warmer parts of the state, like the Bay Area and Central Valley, bats don't have to hibernate, which means they might do okay. One way of keeping close tabs on these bats is by listening to them. That's a specialty of Winston Lancaster, the Sacramento state biologist who we heard from earlier.
I can hear a bit of activity, and maybe you can pick that up with your microphone.
Lancaster is holding up what's called a bat detector. It's about the size and shape of an old transistor radio. It can detect sounds that are too high frequency and too fast for humans to hear, then convert them and slow them down so they're audible to us. Today, it sounds a lot like static.
It's simply because there are hundreds of bats chattering at once.
For scientists keeping track of bats, listening to them is one of the best ways to know how the animals are doing. That's because bats use sound to navigate and to eat. You can hear those echolocation calls clearly in these bat detector recordings made in a lab.
There's a search phase of echolocation in which the animal is just flying and making a sound, looking for insects in its area.
As the bat approaches its prey, the sounds get faster and faster until they reach what Lancaster calls the terminal phase.
In this terminal phase, they're essentially going as fast as they possibly can. Very, very short calls. And this is the last approach. So when we hear all this, then you know that the animal has made an attempt to feed.
From an economic perspective, feeding is exactly what makes these bats so important. In fact, Dave Johnston says bats are some of the great unsung heroes of California's agricultural economy.
One of the things that you might consider bats do as a service, if you will, to the human population is that they do eat this enormous number of insects.
A lactating female bat may eat as much as her own body weight's worth of insects every single night in the summer.
And when you consider the presumably millions of bats that occur here, those numbers will be significant.
Bat advocates are calling for strong federal action to try and stop the spread of white nose syndrome. They say by limiting human access to caves and other places that bats hibernate, white nose syndrome can be stopped or at least slowed down. For the California Report, I'm Amy Standen.
See a slideshow of bats and listen to their calls on our website, californiareport.org. We tend to think of food and health and social justice as three separate things, but in real life, they all come together at the kitchen table. Increasingly, nonprofits in California are offering healthy cooking classes in neighborhoods where putting healthy food on the table is a challenge. Today, we visit one program called Get Cooking in West Oakland. Inside a grand old Victorian house in Defremery Park, Jamoke Hinton Hodge, program director for a group called People's Grocery, tells Get Cooking participants what they already know. There are no supermarkets in West Oakland. The easiest way to shop is at a liquor or convenience store, but the choices are limited.
They're not in the business, usually, of having fresh fruits and vegetables. It's much easier for them to sell and make a profit on processed food because it stays on the shelf a lot longer.
The folks gathered at the table nod their heads in agreement. They're all parents and guardians of kids attending West Oakland Middle School. And from experience, they know that however cheap the processed foods are to sell, they do not sell at cheap prices. For affordable variety, a special trip is required to a tonier neighborhood. 68-year-old Nellie McNeil has done it many times.
If a corner store is selling greens for, say, a dollar, and Safeway has them for 50 cents a bunch, and I have three kids to feed, then I'm going to get on that bus, because I've done that.
Lauren Bridges borrows a car once a month to stock up for her children. She freezes her meat and asks if she can do that with the vegetables, too.
Cook them and freeze them? I'm speaking on just like bell peppers.
Yeah.
You know, my onions
absolutely.
Don't really...
Cut them up, freeze them.
Cut them up, freeze them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hinton Hodge also suggests Bridges walk to a food co-op four blocks from where she lives. Bridges looks dubious, so Hinton Hodge suggests another idea. There are outfits, she says, that deliver seasonal produce in affordably priced CSA or community-supported agriculture boxes. Access to this kind of information is easy to take for granted when you have high-speed internet access, but many people in West Oakland don't. Now it's time to move from the table to the kitchen. Get Cooking is a collaboration between three nonprofits all dedicated to reducing local rates of obesity and diet-related diseases. For 7 weeks this spring, family cooks are invited to learn what healthy food is, where to find it nearby, and how to prepare it in the kitchen. The chef in residence is Christy Bickerdike of The Full Plate in Montclair.
Knives. We've got brand new knives. They are sharp, okay? Yes, we have a first aid kit, but we prefer that you leave with all your fingers today, okay? You came in with 10. We want you to leave with 10.
Bickerdike teaches recipes she knows will resonate, not just with the cooks, but with the kids they have to feed at home. So today, the class is working on a healthier version of mac and cheese. This one's a layered pasta dish baked with a secret ingredient tucked inside, spinach.
They find a nice little surprise in that macaroni and cheese. We're not doing the neon orange macaroni and cheese. We're doing it from scratch. We'll be creating a roux, making our own cheese sauce, and adding it to a nice whole wheat pasta.
The students also get a recipe for a spinach salad on this day, but Get Cooking's organizers know these cooks are competing for approval with sugar, salt, and fat-laden fast foods. Watching the stove, Nellie McNeil says she's open to change, even if it means working with new ingredients that take more effort.
I've never used the whole grain macaroni before. It takes a little bit longer than the white macaroni. I'm willing to learn.
McNeil and the other students will return home from class with the meals they made. And the hope is they'll also bring home a spirit of adventure their families find irresistible.
Need someone to grate cheese. Cheese! Cheese, guys. All right.
Tell us what you think of what you hear on the California Report. You can email us at calreport@kqed.org. or comment on specific stories online at californiareport.org. While you're there, you'll see all the stories we archive online. And if you're keen to listen to the California Report on your own time, we podcast, you can sign up at californiareport.org or look for us at iTunes. A death in the family, the loss of a job, the end of a relationship. Painful moments can send a person's life into a tailspin. But for some, the pain can force them to look in new and inspirational directions. As part of our series Turning Points, Roger Rudick brings us the story of a middle-aged research biologist in Silicon Valley whose painful divorce eventually led to a new career, a new city, and real fulfillment.
For more than 100 years, children have rung the call to prayer bell outside the Hampa Hongwanji Buddhist Temple in Little Tokyo in downtown Los Angeles. This Sunday, as parishioners pray and sing, one of their ministers is preparing for a very personal sermon.
I'm proud to be Mexican-American and Filipino.
That's the Reverend William Briones, who's been with the temple for 10 years.
It's very unusual for a non-Japanese American to come into temple. More unusual is to stick around for so long, and more unusual is to become a minister.
Reverend Briones grew up in a Catholic household in Mountain View, but that's not to say he had no exposure to Buddhism.
By coincidence, I lived about a quarter of a mile from a Buddhist temple. What divided us from the temple was just a big tomato field.
Across that field, he could hear Buddhist bells and smell the incense. Still, aside from being an idle curiosity, he had little interest in Buddhism. What he was interested in was biology. He started a career with a pharmaceutical company in Silicon Valley, married his high school sweetheart, and settled into the good life.
We lived in Cupertino, had a nice house, 4 cars, the whole tamale.
His wife Julie was Buddhist, so he started to go to temple with her and the kids. But he didn't really take it seriously. Until 28 years later, he ran into the dark side of love. Briones discovered his wife was having an affair. Even though that affair happened 15 years ago, and he has since remarried, the memory is still raw.
And I was very surprised. And when I found out that things weren't... This is hard. Sorry.
He'd hoped to repair the marriage, to move on, but it was not to be.
When I asked, well, do you want a divorce? She said, well, I don't think we can afford one. And I thought, that isn't what I wanted to hear.
Suddenly, the teachings of Buddhism about the impermanence and fleeting nature of life, of everything, even love itself, started to make sense to him. About the same time, his employer was downsizing.
And they would pay people to quit. I'd been there for 28 years, and I got the maximum, and they gave me 2 years' pay. My life was defined by my kids, my work, and definitely my wife. Once that is taken away, it's like, oh, who am I? At the time, people at work were saying, oh, that's so admirable, you're going to go into the ministry. And I said, look, I don't know what I'm doing. This was all in 1 week. I filed for divorce. I gave my notice of resignation. And I had talked to some of the people at the Institute of Buddhist Studies.
That institute's in Berkeley, and he went to Kyoto, Japan, to finish the ministerial program. Eventually, the temple assigned him to LA's Little Tokyo, where he's taught philosophy and, for the past 10 years, given sermons every Sunday.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. Love is an emotion. Love refers to something we feel about very strongly. Emotions are fleeting. We love 1 minute and are out of love the next. The state of being in love is the ultimate peak of consciousness. For Buddhists, celebrate life and its possibilities. Remember, each day, all is changing.
Buddhist or not, that is a lesson, says Minister Briones, that we can probably all take from a painful breakup.
And so now I'm in a position where everything's great. But, you know, it's neither great or bad in reality. It just is. And this could change too.
For the California Report, I'm Roger Rudick.
You can check out our other Turning Points profiles online at californiareport.org. That's Bebop Alula, one of the tracks on a new album about to come out from Brian Setzer. Most of us may know him from his rockabilly days in the Stray Cats, but the guitarist, singer, and songwriter has also made a name for himself in big band jazz, swing, and jump blues, as well as numerous solo albums over the past decade. He joins us now to talk about his latest release, Setzer Goes Instrumental, available in the U.S. April 19th. We played a little Bebop Alula there up top. Can you tell us a little bit about that song and this version of it?
Bebop Alula, he's my baby doll, my baby doll. Oh, man. That's the sexiest song in the world. That's the rockabilly standard, Bebop Alula. And I can't believe no one's ever played it instrumentally yet. I think I'm the first one to do it. And when I sat down with the guitar and just started picking that melody, it just felt natural. That was like the first or second song that I'd put together for the record.
This is your first almost completely non-vocal album, right?
It is. It's the first instrumental record I've ever done.
And why is that?
I just never thought of it that way. When I sit down to write music, it's just words come out, you know, and with the melody. And I never really thought of doing it. I mean, I've won 3 Grammys for instrumentals, so duh, I should have thought about doing it, I guess. But I was, I don't really think that way. I was just writing some music, and all of a sudden I started fooling around with that Blue Moon song, and I came up with a really kind of neat hybrid of different styles going on in that. I thought, this is cool, and then I did Bebop Alula, and then I got excited, and then I started writing songs, and that's how it started out.
You really cover the gamut on Setzer Goes Instrumental. There's fun, dreamy, bluesy, fast and danceable. How did you go about deciding on the mix of songs for this album?
That's a good question, because you don't want things to be all the same or all in the same key. And usually when I get two or three songs that are sort of in the same vibe, I think it's time to switch it up. So I might get two or three rockabilly things going and think, I could really hear something jazzy or something like surfy in here. You know, all those sounds I like, all those guitar tones. So usually as I'm writing it, I change it up.
It's interesting that you mentioned surfy. One of these tracks, Go Go Godzilla, is featured in an upcoming surf movie, Soul Surfer. Let's hear a little bit of that track. So what do you want to tell us about Go Go Godzilla?
I want to tell you all to hang ten.
Now, this isn't the first time you've dabbled in Hollywood. What was it like to collaborate on this project?
This is actually a pretty good story, because I think they didn't have a big cast, and it was anything surf or that stuff I think is cool, punk movie or like an independent movie, I just give them the song, you know. They don't have to pay for it. You know, if it's Coca-Cola, they got to pay for it. But they called up and wanted a surf kind of sound that I guess the people who were doing the music were fans. And the album, it still hasn't come out, but I gave them that song. And they loved it. And that was that. And then all of a sudden they call back, hey, all of a sudden this is a big movie. We've got Carrie Underwood and we've got Helen Hunt and Dennis Quaid. So we can afford to pay you now. So maybe if you do good things, it comes back to you. So that's how that got in the movie.
You recently performed in a tribute to Les Paul with Jeff Beck, another master guitarist. How important is it to you to educate your audience about great music that's come before?
Yeah, I mean, when people hear all that stuff, I mean, when they hear Les Paul, when they hear Gene Vincent, when they hear those guys, they love it. And you don't have to really make them like a classroom, like, listen to this. This is important because he was the first rock and roll guitar player. They just automatically like it, you know, when they hear Scotty Moore, when they hear early Elvis, you know. So it's just a matter of getting people to hear it, you know. And, yeah, doing stuff like that gets it out there. You know, that's the whole idea.
Brian Setzer, it's a pleasure talking with you.
Nice talking to you.
That was Brian Setzer. His latest solo album, Setzer Goes Instrumental, is available in the U.S. April 19th. And that's The California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director this week is Erica Kelly. The technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman. Our interns are Lillian Monjo and Alexandra Wexler. Victoria Maulione is our producer. Andrea Kissick was a contributing editor. The senior online editor is Gabriel Cohn, with help from David Marks. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, with nomination information about the 2012 Leadership Awards at www.irvine.org. The California Endowment, building healthy communities because that's where health happens. More information at calendow.org. And the SunPower Corporation, offering high-efficiency solar energy solutions to households and businesses in California and worldwide. The SunPower Corporation, online at sunpowersolar.com.